Whether on the back roads or in between the skyscrapers, tiptoeing in the city, all of us in one way or another are informed and shaped by the environment of our upbringing and the place we call home. In my recent travels, I was grateful to spend the afternoon with poet and storyteller Abby Miller. With her poetry and her one-woman shows, she has tackled some of her experiences with insanity, love, feminism, and rural roots living, to name a few. Abby Miller's American poetic voice erupts with a self-effacing rawness and authenticity that at once punctures our commonly held societal beliefs, yet it inspires us to heal in a way that only sharing our personal truths can. This Curious Lightning, we'll call it the Poetic Bender. I'm your host, Dakota Clearwater Lacroix. Thanks for joining me.
Dive down deep in your ocean, find what makes you thrive. The one thing that this world needs are people who've come alive.
So I do feel that sense of knowing this land. And when I wrote the poem, My Heart Beats a Path, My Life's Blood Takes Me There, it was because I was going through trials and I would drive away from this place in Carlton where I'd grown up and lived forever. And I would find myself up on the rendezvous where my great-grandmother had lived. And I would just think to myself, like, why don't I go up Twist River? Why don't I go up the loop? Why don't I turn somewhere else in my pondering, wandering? And there I'd be. And I thought, you know, it's because my heart feels this as comfort, this landscape here. And that's where my heart beats a path. My life's blood takes me there, up the river my grandma grew on, and to the rendezvous to look at the sky from the same spot my great-grandma stood and looked. And that whole poem basically was about the memories left on the land and that sense of feeling these women's experiences, especially in country, well, anywhere. Women's experiences are very subtly left. The lilacs planted, you know, the one tree in the yard, maybe things that aren't noted the way a man's story might be told.
All your thoughts are original, cannot be defined. What makes you an individual is how you pass the time. And as your thoughts drift through the atmosphere, let your mind coast away. As you set your sails and the tide is near, cast off your minds and pray. And
so in a society where more and more and more and more the arts and that part of the time to just, you know, just hang out and think as a kid, like just as a kid to wander for a day or so, or just, you know, not have this, oh, schedule all the time and everything's so structured to feed you, fill you, feed you, fill you, that you don't really have the opportunity just to receive. Maybe in our society, like at one point in time, we did. And so we're hungry for what we're missing out there. And
so is poetry, in a way, a playfulness for you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that, like you say, for the artist, it's like I knew there was something I needed to do. I always had a verbal obsession all my life. I'm from very, very oral people, lots of storytelling, and respect for, well, my grandparents on my mom's side owned the Twist Theater. So theater as well was really important to us. Movies, you know, all that was really important. So the arts were valued in my people. You know, in that sense, certainly the folk arts. And, you know, I was never sent to college to become an artist, but I was going to college finally in my late 20s, and I just knew I wanted to be an artist. I felt it. And I wanted to be a photographer, I thought, because I had this visual thing. But the techno part of the photography, even then, was intimidating to me. And then I found myself writing, writing, writing. I just started writing, and my life was kind of going to college, I guess, maybe. Might have started it the most being a single parent. I became relational to my journaling. And I mean, I'd go to classes. I was afraid to write in college, you know. panic attack workshop classes about writing papers. So I didn't consider myself a writer. But then I moved home to be, because I wanted to be on the land, and I wanted to raise my kids in a community that was close, and I wanted to be able to work at a job where I could schedule myself in a creative way, which hairdressing did allow for me to do. And I just decided I was going to make my homestead my relation, because I didn't find a partner out there in the world, and I was just going to be creative and see what happened. Let your footsteps spell out freedom. Sail
away, sail away. Yeah, yeah. I mean, poetry, it's fast and furious in many ways, right? It sounds like it's rushing out of you and can end up in a closet or in a bin, never to be seen again, or certain elements of it float up, rise up to the top, and then becomes a performance.
And I think that's it too, in the sense, like, I do struggle with work on the page. I have a very hard time getting it on the page and getting into the published state. So I don't know, it is interesting. I used to have so much fun writing, and I used to just write it over and over by hand, so by the time I was done, I knew every piece by heart. And now I write originally by hand, then I word process it. And so I don't have that same sense of having it so deeply in me by the time I'm done. And I think in the beginning, I really had heavy themes. Like, I really wanted to write what it is to be a single mother, or a struggling woman, or to tell the stories of my grandmothers. And then I kind of hit them. I kind of hit my grandmother's story. Then I did my abortion story. I did some domestic violence work. And, I'm the perpetrator in my own life at the end here. So I've been on both sides of that coin. I mean, if I had something to talk about right now, really, in the world, it would be the truth of what it is to be nuts. And the truth of what it can be like when the society calls you that and holds you in that place. And not that maybe you don't need to be held there. I don't even have that answer. And on some levels, as a poet, I'm geared for this. And so much, I wish they would have recorded some of it. But, so I was at the hospital, I had this psychotic break in the jail, and then I was held in the hospital in a gurney for hours while I'm ranting and raving. And my last thing that I did there was look at a nurse above me and say, I'm going to die now then, huh? Because I'd gotten this thing about that I'd taken poison going in my mind story. And she nodded her head. So then I got taken into this ambulance believing I was dying. And I woke up at the mental hospital and I wasn't dead and I was glad. And my dental hygienist sister had a client who is a nurse that works in a hospital and said, when mental cases come in, they have to be so sure that they're really nuts enough to get a bed at the nut house that they have to witness them long enough and or there is no place else for them. And so they are there in the regular hospital and they can't dope them. I'm like, why didn't they just give me the shot? They finally gave me the shot and I just slept it off, woke up, felt normal. Why didn't they just do that? Well, they have to watch the behavior for long enough to justify that you get a place in the hospital. Like, would they make you go and have a heart attack for an hour before they decide that they could fit you into the hospital? No.
What does that say about what we think of our mental aspect, our spiritual aspect?
You're like a criminal and treated as a criminal. And I just saw another movie about a woman in Europe that was an amazing painter that had a very amazing kind of spiritual experience. She wasn't doing anything that hurt anyone, and she was taken into the asylum, and she was strapped down, and it was very alarming to me to revisit that feeling of being unable to, itch or scratch or move. So you're already losing your noodle, and so now they got you, and I grant you safety and all those things are important, and I saw in my time at the hospital different levels of confusion, and I realized, that safety is the issue. But then the treatment of I guess the mystery of it, the fact that people can't really identify what it is, they can't diagnose it with science, and so it's just, it's like this real secret thing, like OBHC, for an example. So now I'm out, and I'm over at the health in Okanagan, and I noticed in the waiting room, like, people don't ever talk about what they've gone through. Nobody says, what happened with you? You know, where have you been? What are you taking? Nobody talks about it, but yet somebody came in one day, and she was a nurse, and she was waiting with her child, and the receptionist comes out and says, oh, I just had surgery, and they gave me this, and they gave me that, and it took longer than I thought to heal, but now I'm feeling better. And I thought, you know, we're not encouraged to share our medical or our healing story.
It sounds like...
I went to mindfulness class, and we're not even talking about... We don't share what we came from. We're all just acting like it didn't happen, and now we're going to do cognitive therapy, and we're not going to let it happen again, you know, and that's our goal.
Sounds like the opposite of poetry.
Well, in a sense, you know, like even when I'm there and I'm saying to him all the time, I'm a poet, you know, it's no problem for me to be crazy. I'm a poet. I expect to be crazy. I've always been crazy. People have always called me crazy. I'm eccentric for sure. And I definitely had good reasons to finally break. And, you know, I didn't have a hard time realizing what circumstances had led me to this place. But just to be there and not be, like, under the influence of the meds and see that things like... First, even your friends and family will say, you face it, Abby, you really were out there. You know, you really were over the top. You know, I had to do this. I had to make this choice that you needed to go here. And so then you go there. And then when you get there, you say, I don't really need to be here. And then they're like, you have to admit you need to be there before you can get out. So you have to admit you're crazy before they're going to let you out. And you have to admit you're crazy before they're going to treat you. And you have to be treated before you can get out. So bottom line, you got to admit you're crazy. And then you get out. And then you want to talk about that you're crazy, and all your friends, well, Abby, you're not really crazy. Well, what am I, you know? And I think that a lot of people feel this secret that they don't want to talk about, that they've had emotional issues, or they think because of this stigma and this sense of shame that, you know, even like for me to casually say I'm nuts or I'm crazy, it just makes people edgy.
Thank you for joining me on Curious Lightning. We're going to take a quick break here and come back with some live original music inspired by Abby's poetry. You can visit us online at www.curiouslightning.com. Hear extended outtakes and some extra music as well. Thank you for joining us here at KTRT and Curious Lightning. Ashley Fullerton is a soulful and talented singer-songwriter who grew up on the very same land as Abby and dealt with incarceration herself. With less than a day's notice, I asked Ashley if she would perform an original piece based on these shared experiences. Here's that performance.
Well, I'm walking in the rain,
And in these times we live, I have this collection. It's like, it's probably four poems that run. They probably run 10 minutes at least. And it starts with, I'm a white-faced, red-freckled, true blue American, bred and born to be that way, and to share the higher aspiration to wear each other's shoes before you walk away. Goes into two or three poems about being female, goes into a poem about war and abortion based on the first day the original President Bush declared war in the Middle East, the same day he declared a moment of silence for the unborn babies of women choosing abortion. Well, I happen to have young boys as my children. I happen to have just had a miscarriage. I happen to have had an abortion in my life. And I just felt, yeah, now you're telling me you're going to send all these children away and take their lives. But today, instead, we're going to honor unborn babies of women choosing abortion. So it became this real hit for me about the shame and blame for women. And so that piece, which is a very powerful piece, likens the experience of the hardest choice you'll ever make, which is for a man or for a warrior soldier to go to war, for a woman or any parent person to choose to or not to. I was at a festival at Whidbey Island, and I was at the evening poetry slam, kind of. It was a kind of a poetry writing fun game. And this kid that was in the, it was like in the back of this bar, he was in the front, and he kind of fumbles his way back to the back, and he was a vet. And he like did this like three line thing, or it was like something to the point of like, either you like, you don't know what we've done, or how this affect, anyway, whatever it was, he did like every, he said it three times over, and the first word he hit, then the second time he hit the second word, third time he hit the third word, and it was this kind of question about what and why, and it was the most profound thing that was done at the whole festival. It wasn't even a writer, it wasn't even a person that was there. He just was, oh, you're talking poetry, I'll talk some poetry to you right now, you know. And then he finds his way back out by the pool table, and his girlfriend kind of comes back, I'm sorry, I can't, you know, I can't control what he does, you know. And yeah, he was the most profound thing that was there. And I just don't understand it. I don't understand, I don't understand the leadership in this world that would not understand and recognize what we're creating in this pain in our people. And everyone, it's not, you know, I don't know the military very well. I've never been a part of a military family. I don't have really military friends really much, so I can't speak for that experience, but to just imagine from my own life experiences and that sense of trauma that I've experienced affecting me to where like I can't wear jewelry because I got arrested. And many, many of the early pioneer men out here were Civil War vets, and they were trying to leave their past behind, and they didn't know how to cope, you know. And that's why, just like in Alaska, it's like all places after, you know, after wars, warriors will find their place in nature when they can't find it in society.
Let's listen to another original piece of music from Ashley Fullerton, based on Abby Miller's poem, Born and Raised to Be.
To be. was born and raised to be. I am reminded who I was born and raised to be.
It's like the very first piece I ever wrote. A is for apple and abuse. She, the apple of his eye, the object of his passion, the flowering victim of trees that stem from roots of exploitation. They bear seeds, the tiny pills of power he takes to calm his fear. The precedent prescription passed down for years, she assumes her pain as guilt. For what? The Bible did not tell. That he is not him, she is condemned to live in hell. He justifies her loss, his gain, balancing some more the fall she caused. He can't get up. She's nothing but a whore.
Is there a particular spirituality to your poetic world?
I don't know when you say that, I guess. It's like in the sense, like this piece, the fact that the very first piece, I was in college and I wrote She the Apple of His Eye because I was supposed to write a paper with a classical theme. And like I had to write about this thing of abuse. And I couldn't write a paper, so I ended up writing this poem and the teacher accepted it. And it was supposed, it was supposed to be a sonnet. It was supposed to be a poem. And it didn't, it kind of looked like a sonnet to start with, but I'd never even considered writing poetry ever.
Does your poetry allow you to whisper some of these unspoken things to us?
Well, I don't know, and maybe that's where I failed. I haven't whispered too much. I've shouted most loudly. A processing tool, you know, like what do you do with this information? And I think that people given permission to write poetry can do with it. That's where you can do it. You can do with whatever it is there, and it doesn't have to be judged or, you know, poetry is a very personal thing for most people. It's kind of like most writers write poetry, but not all writers call themselves poets. And some poets don't call themselves writers. You know, it's kind of an interesting, kind of different thing. But that process, if our whole society was given permission and encouraged and shown how to express through poetry on a daily basis, then we would have more tools to save ourselves some of these other things. You know, like even in the systems of institution and confinement, you know, many, many poets come out of those systems. And when they went in, they didn't know yet because they hadn't found that place yet in them that is at the end of their rope, where then you come to this place where it's beyond, you know, logical thinking, and you are putting it together. But without the tools, like at the Nut House, my chick friend who I was rooming with was major klepto, and so she got me some blue paper and some pencils. But they weren't saying, oh, you're a poet? Would you like some paper while you're here for these 14 days? Nobody's saying that to me. One newspaper every morning on the whole pod. And Nancy likes to tear paper, so if she gets up first, nobody gets to read the newspaper all day. You know, at the hotel at the airport right around the corner there, every room's got a newspaper sitting in front of it that morning, and nobody's probably even reading them. And then at the Nut House, we got a bunch of people sitting there watching reruns from 1964, you know. And it's just like those things about what could help you, like give a person having a struggle, something to write with, or some way to communicate. And that's what poetry is, some way to communicate with it, with you, with others, with here, just out of you. Thank you. just get in people's face sometimes. But letting that question exist and finding a way to cultivate that question, it is the higher place. It is the place to leave the person with something to bring. Even a poem about the day would then bring for another person their day into that poem. You know, a poem about a love, of course we all can bring our loves to those poems. And I do think poetry, it can be all. It can just be all of it.
Dive down deep in your ocean, find what makes you thrive. The one thing that this world needs are people who've come alive.
Well, there you have it. Thank you for joining us here on Curious Lighting for the Poetic Bender. I'm your host, Dakota Clearwater Lacroix. A very, very special thanks to the sonic creations and brilliance of Spacey J and Ashley Fullerton, and to the sounds of Spark and the Revolution. Without their sonic creations, this show would not be what it is. And it is with such gratitude that I thank Abby Miller for her candor and her time during this interview. This show was written by The Curiosity Farm and produced for KTRT. If you want to visit us on the web for a George Carlin experience, do so at www.curiouslightning.com. Find links to the music you've heard today or leave us a message on Facebook. Either way, stay in touch. Take care. Steps spell out freedom. Sail away, sail.